Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Be amazed at the number of people today who try to persuade you that the banshee doesn't exist, that the banshee is just the sound of, oh, a fox or a hare or an owl. And some of those would be country people too, people you think would know better. But you see, country people have changed. There's so many things going on now, mechanical things. You go out your door today and there's chainsaws and there's hedge trimmers and there's tractors and there's... To get a bit of quietness now, on a summer's day especially, is almost impossible, even in a country place. To think you could hear the banshee's voice now. Well, think again. I have met people who have helped her. Many people who have helped her. People I trust. And I have met a few, just a few, who have seen her. And whose description has been convincing, to say the very least. Remember, I'd be a sceptic in most things. I've been collecting folklore for 47 years and I first, second, third, fourth, I don't believe. Or maybe I should say I don't believe lightly. But there's always people that are convincing, and some of these people, well, let me tell you, who is the banshee first of all? Well, the words themselves, ban, she, fairy woman. And what does she do? She gives a warning of death. Now, in some parts of Ireland, she's not called the banshee at all. She's called the bow, B-A-D-H-B-H, to spell it in Irish. She tends to be called the bow in the southeast ish, that part of the country, whereas most people would regard her as the Banshee. Most people know her as the Banshee. And what families claim her? Well, again, I say most people think it's the O's and the Macs, the old Irish families. But not really. There's a host of families who claim her as theirs. Some of them, you would say, are these Irish families. For example, the Adamsons, the Morrises, the Kirwans, the Holmeses, the Greys, the Foxes, the Farrises, the Dourises, the Deerings, the you could go on, and no, of course, when those are translated into something else, maybe names can get twisted, and they sometimes go back to, well, who knows, but you see, when English families came to Ireland, sometimes they saw, when they were granted land in Ireland, sometimes in the 17th century, they saw that, well, they weren't stupid people. They saw that the mark of almost possession of true Gaeldom, the mark of true Gaeldom was having a Banshee. And they weren't slow to spot this and say that, we're only new here. We've been granted land, sometimes for service to the crown, and it was confiscated land. So we better get a Banshee too if we want to be regarded as the real proprietors to this. So they claimed a Banshee. Made good sense. Even though their name was maybe as English as anybody's. I mean, anybody English's. And so very often we see that names today who have a Banshee are anything but Irish looking. But in the course of the years down and the centuries since, those people have become as Irish as anybody else, so I suppose they are as entitled to claim a Banshee as anybody who is O'Donnell or McNamara or McIntyre or McKenna or O'Dwyer or O'Leary or God only knows what. Linehan, for example, me. Well, I suppose that's all Linehan, so we're descended from the Blackbuds, I presume. But in any case, it was a serious matter if you met the Banshee, because who was she crying for? Maybe yourself? Mm-hmm. It was a serious matter. And it was any person that I ever heard the story about the Banshee from, they weren't laughing. It was the kind of cry that gave you the shivers. The cry of the Banshee was, the cry that sent the shiver up your back, and you only hoped that her cry wasn't for you. And when the person died that the Banshee was crying for, you blessed yourself and said, thank God, that wasn't for me anyway. Now let me tell you a story that I heard from a man who experienced it himself. He was a young fellow, he said, who hated school. He hated school, well, that wasn't too strange. And the reason he hated school was the master was a savage. The master was a savage. He'd beat them for no particular reason except the satisfaction of it. Now, the same boy's father and his two uncles were cattle drovers. And the boy, of course, he'd love to be on the road. with his father and the two uncles, partly to escape the school and partly because he'd love to be out seeing the world with his father and the uncles. Love to be well, you know what young lads are like. But his father, no, no, you're staying at school. 'Tis the only hope, not to be like us. And of course the boy thought, I want to be like ye. He didn't say that, of course. But the father knew something that the boy didn't, that it was no romantic life at all to be on the road, to be out hail, rain or snow, walking miles and miles, driving other people's cattle, sometimes having to wait hours and hours and hours on a street, waiting to sell, when there was no buyers. That wasn't fun. That wasn't fun. Sometimes having to bring cattle home again and then not getting paid. Well, you'd get paid a small fee for having done it, but by the Lord, I tell you, 'twas no life, 'twas a life for a dog, and it aged men before that time. The father, he didn't want his son, following that kind of a life. So, school is the only way of rising above this kind of thing. He was a good father, he didn't want any of that for his son. So anyway, time went on, and there used to be a cattle fair in Gort that time at the end of the year, month of November, I think it was. And one of the uncles got sick at some other fair. He got a dose of the flu. Now he stuck it out as long as he could. The boy noticed it. And you see, at that time, you needed three men driving cattle. And the reason was obvious. Of course. One man to keep them going straight, and two others when they came to a crossroads, because to keep the cattle from scattering. There was no trucks, of course, that time. It was all walking cattle. And if you had a little herd of cattle, well, depending on the number, the bigger the herd, the more awkward it would be. And now if you came to a four crossroads, if you came to a five crossroads, and there was one of them on the road to Gort, at near Loch Cooter. Awkward crossroads. But these men, they knew their job. But, I tell you, if you've got skittish cattle, you needed all your skill. Now, one of the uncles got sick anyway, dose of flu or something like that, and the boy saw his chance. And the father was caught. He needed the help. They had to get the God. They needed the money, of course, to buy the Christmas. So anyway, all right, he says. All right. Now, he saw his opportunity, of course, of teaching the son a lesson that he'd never forget. And he was the man to do it. So he said, all right, he said, you can come. But, there'll be no complaints out of you, he said, because there's no one going to take no notice of you. And of course, the son, no, all right, he says, all right, Dada, I'll be good. So, the day came, so only a couple of days after, and the mother, she had the breakfast ready for them at about 5 o'clock in the morning. Oh, now it was 12 or 13 miles from where they were going, in Crusheen Parish, to Gort. They were down at the butt of the parish, and be the Lord, anyway, they set out after the breakfast. The cattle were inside in little paddock, I suppose, haggard, that him collected from the night before. They set off, and there was about 6 or 7 or 8 crossroads between that and Gort. Now, the father wanted to be there early. He wanted to be there around 8:30, because he had his own place in the street of Gort. All the fairs were held in streets at that time. And his place was under the railway bridge that's going across the street there in Gort. And why? That was his usual perch, because if it came wet, he'd have a small bit of shelter. God help us, not much, but a small bit. And people knew that that was his place. Anyway, they went on, and they went on, and they went on. And most of the crossroads now, they were simple enough. They were small crossroads. But on he went. And the boy was good. Of course, he was young, he was lively, and the father would give him the beck. Go, go. And the boy, he'd be up at the crossroads, even before the uncle. The father was doing the driving straight on. And they passed one crossroad and another crossroad and another, and they got to Gort. Anyhow, they made it a little bit ahead of time. And it was a busy, there were a lot of cattle, there was a busy enough fair. But one small problem. There weren't many buyers. Oh, it wasn't a busy fair, all right. There were plenty of cattle, but not many buyers. So we got anywhere. They were there hour after hour. And you see, the boy wasn't used to fairs. And the father had told him, first thing, now he says, your job is at this side here, mind our cattle and keep them separate from that man's there. Sure, the boy hadn't a clue. Hadn't a clue. Because cattle will be getting mixed with other cattle there on the side of the street. And you see, when cattle are restless, and some of them young cattle, they will be getting mixed. And I tell you, if a cattle makes it like that on top of you, shite stone on top, you're going to be dirty for the whole day. And the boy had a few very close escapes. The poor lad. Yeah. See, he was a young fella. But anyway, he managed, you'll learn quick, get a thing like that. But on went the day. And what, 9, 10, 11, 12, the Angelus rang, and still no sale. Very bad fare in that way. Very few buyers. 1 o'clock came. They were hungry, of course, no. 5:30 in the morning, since they ate. 2 o'clock came. A man came up to them. How much do you want for those skeletons? Jesus, the father nearly hit him. Why, you cut, God bless you, what do you mean? Skeletons, they're as good cattle as in the street. What? The man walked away. All right, he says, if that's the way you feel about them. He walked away, and he could afford to, of course, because there was plenty of other cattle there. Anyway, they were there another hour. 2 more hours. Nothing like a drop of tea. But 6 o'clock came. The Angelus rang again. This other man came up to them. Oh, I suppose he had been watching them. He made him an offer. It wasn't what they were looking for. But they couldn't take home the cattle with them. The rent had to be paid. The rent day was coming up. And it was a less offer than they wanted. But eventually they came to a kind of a deal. He came up a bit, they came down a bit, and eventually they made a kind of a deal. And they had to take down the cattle into the railway, put them aboard a wagon, sign the old document, and down into the pub where the deal was finished. And of course that was a racket. That was a racket, because on a fair day, the pubs that were open long hours, extra business of course, and now the boy, he was tucked in also, and he was given a bottle of orange or something, and into the corner, and it was an old smoky dive of a place, because on a fair day, you see, there'd be fellas inside making deals and finishing out deals and smoke. Look, pubs were a different place entirely that time, and the time passed, because the father and the uncle, they knew fellas there, and pints were bought and pints were sold, blah, 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 and the hours passed. And the boy, he's laying over to his father, Daddy, can we go home? No, we'll go home. Remember now, the father was going to teach him a lesson that he'd never forget. He'd stay at school from now on. And 8 o'clock came, and 9 o'clock came, and 10 o'clock came, and 11 o'clock came. Oh, the boy, the father bought him another bottle of orange just to keep him quiet. And the boy was starved now, remember? He hadn't eaten since 5:30 the morning before that. And now it was 10 o'clock the night after. So I bet the lad, around 12:30 or 1 o'clock, they were thrown out of the pub. And as he told me, I was falling with hunger and with the tiredness. And he said, it was 12 miles home. And do you think anybody picked me up? He said, not a hope. I had to walk that 12 miles home. And by the time, he says, we got home, it was nearly dawning day, he said. And when we were going in the Boreen home, I could see the light of the kitchen in the window. My mother was up, I suppose, getting the breakfast. And we opened the gate and we walked in the boreen. I could hardly keep my eyes open. But as we were halfway in the boreen, we saw the woman sitting above on the wall on our left, combing her hair. And of course we stopped, because we didn't know her. Who was she? But anyway, my father and myself, we shoved over to the other side of the boreen. And my father saluted her. And she didn't salute us back, only kept combing and combing her hair, long grey hair. No, we passed as fast as we could, but my uncle was behind us. Now, he was a different kind of a man. He saluted her too, and no reply. And when he got no reply, what'd he do? Only he made a dart across and snapped the comb out of her hand. And the minute he did, there was this out of her. Well, the three of us, we ran for the door. And Christ, we nearly put the door and the jams of the door in before us. Now, I'll remember all my life, he told me, that when we arrived in the kitchen, there was my mother, just beside the fireplace. And she had, what would I call it, he said, she had a pot in her hand, like she was going to make porridge or something. She had a pot in her hand beside the fireplace, and she looked around and she said, what in the name of Christ are you after doing? And she said, close the door quick. And my father slammed out the door, and the crying surrounded the house, lonesome crying. And my mother, she looked and she saw the comb in my uncle's hand, and she said, you bloody Amadan, she said, what did you do? And my uncle, he was just about to open the door and throw it out. He said, don't, she said. And she grabbed the tongs. No, he said, 'twas the kind of a tongs that was made by the local blacksmith, one of the old style tongs. By the Christ, 'twas one of them that you wouldn't bend over your knee like you would the modern old tongs. She said, give me that. And he gave her the comb, and she put it in the end of the tongs. And now she said, open the door, small bit. And he opened the door a couple of inches, and she reached out the tongs and the comb on the tongs, and immediately it was snapped out of her hand, and the crying stopped. Now we stood there, the four of us, in the silence. And it was like we were there for 5 minutes. No, I'm sure we were only there, he said, maybe for 5-10 seconds. But it was like we were there for 5 minutes. You know yourself, in a thing like that, how time passes so slow. But when there was no sound, my mother, she went over to the window and she pulled the shutters. To only a small little window, and she pulled open the shutters slow, and it was bright by now, and she looked out, and there was the tongs outside on the ground. And she called my uncle and she said, come here and look at this. And she pointed out the tongs to him, and the tongs was in the shape of an S hook, bent. And she said look at that. That's the way your hand would be, your arm would be, if you had reached out that tongs, you bloody idiot, she said. That was the banshee. And why didn't you leave her alone to get on with her own business and mind your business? And that's the story that man told me that happened to him and to them that night when he was coming back from the fair in Gort, or that morning, I should say. So, he met something that night, and remembered it all his life, because he was an old man when he told me that story about what happened to him when he was a young lad. But one thing was sure, he said, I had no trouble going to school after that.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.